Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Today we go behind the headlines. Missouri's governor is in those headlines just about every day. He sat down recently with St. Louis Public Radio's Jason Rosenbaum for a rare one-on-one interview, talking about some of the key issues of the day. Jason joins me in studio. Jason, good to see you as usual.
I very much appreciate you having me, Don.
It is our pleasure indeed. Before we talk about your sit-down with the governor, he's making some front-page news today with regard to revising some and restoring some cuts to the foster care system. What I find unusual about this is they're kind of admitting they made a mistake.
In a Facebook post that the governor's account posted yesterday, he basically said the buck stops with me. I'm not making excuses and we're going to change course on this. It was interesting in an age where a lot of politicians say, try to spin their way out of responsibility, that in this instance, the governor's taking responsibility and admitting that they didn't do the right thing.
It's not a whole lot of money, but it's important to those people who would receive it. And the governor has actually indicated that he's not averse to changing course if he feels that needs to happen.
You'll hear this in the interview in a little bit, but one of the things that he stressed multiple times is that his plans would get better if people, including his political adversaries, help provide some input into them. He mentioned that with the crime plan. He also, as you'll hear, doesn't see the St. Louis County Prescription Drug Monitoring Program as competing. So that was a philosophy that became eminently clear throughout the interview.
Just a little background before you play some of those clips is, how did you manage the sit-down? That doesn't happen every day with the governor.
It doesn't. And frankly, I've been a political reporter for almost 11 years. And I've talked with Governor Jay Nixon over the phone, and I talked with Governor Matt Blunt with other staffers of the Columbia Daily Tribune. But I had personally never sat one-on-one with a governor before. And his team asked if I would be interested in doing a one-on-one interview at his office at the Wainwright Building downtown, particularly on two things that have been in the news lately, which is his St. Louis crime plan and the prescription drug monitoring program executive order that he issued on that same day. While I guess ideally I would have wanted to talk with him about unlimited amounts of issues, it was my feeling as a journalist that those two issues have gotten a lot of attention. They've also garnered a lot of controversy. And I think that I could have made a one-on-one based off those. But I also asked him about a couple of other things, including the special session next week, and whether he's running for the U.S. Senate. He answered succinctly, no.
Uh-huh. Well, we'll see. We've heard politicians say no before to questions like that.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay, let's set up the first clip. You mentioned his anti-crime program.
Right. The first clip is him talking about this program that he unveiled earlier this month. It's aimed at the state getting involved in the violence and stopping the violence in St. Louis. And I asked him very simply why he felt the state being involved would actually make a difference on stopping crime and stopping violence.
It is essential that we take action. Essential that we take action. A lot of your viewers know, St. Louis right now is the number one city in the country per capita for murder, aggravated assault, rape, and armed robbery. We had 188 murders in 2016. So it's imperative that we take action. And for too long, public leaders have either ignored the problem or have just simply failed to take concrete action. So what we're doing is we're bringing in a special operations team of the Missouri State Highway Patrol. These men and women are all volunteers who've joined this unit for this very important operation. We're beginning to work with the FBI and the DEA on their Mission Save Task Force. This is a task force which is designed to take the most violent offenders off of the street, and they've seen very good results in other cities where they've done this work. And for the first time, Missouri is now working with the FBI and the DEA there.
I know you may not have the exact numbers in front of you, but do you have any estimates on how many Department of Public Safety people are going to be involved in this, as well as the Department of Mental Health and and social services.
Yeah. So thanks for bringing attention. This is a total effort, right? So you've got the Department of Public Safety with the Missouri State Highway Patrol. I'll check and make sure that we get the latest numbers for you. But you're talking about over 24 members of the Missouri State Highway Patrol in the Special Operations Unit, which is flexed to be on Highways 55, Highway 70 in the city of St. Louis. You also have members of the Department of Social Services who are going to be providing trauma counseling in St. Louis public schools, and members of the Department of Mental Health who are going to be working on training to help to de-escalate situations, providing that training to St. Louis City, and we're hopeful, members of the St. Louis County Police Departments as well. I don't have the exact numbers on personnel from DSS and the Department of Mental Health on that, but this is a total team effort, as well, you know, our efforts with the Department of Corrections to make sure that those 450 convicted criminals that the state of Missouri had been letting out every day to walk the streets of St. Louis are now going to be involved in productive programs to make sure that when they reenter society, they're doing so in a productive way, and that when they go out, they're actually being monitored so that they're going out to, for example, go to a very specific interview.
I know from talking with you in the past that you were in Ferguson in 2014.
Yes, sir.
I was in Ferguson in 2014. And one of the things that I heard over and over again from the African-American people that came out to protest Michael Brown's death is stories of them being harassed, disrespected, and dehumanized by police. And I'm asking this question knowing that the Missouri Highway Patrol is very well trained and very well regarded. But what confidence could you provide the African-American residents of St. Louis that more highway patrolmen being in the city is not going to lead to an increase in racial profiling or that harassment that was at the crux of all those protests?
Yeah, well, you're right that the members of the Missouri State Highway Patrol are professionals who hold themselves to the highest standards. And in fact, when I spoke to all of these volunteers before they went out on this assignment, I said one of the things that gives me so much confidence about sending them out onto the streets is that I know in every interaction they have with every citizen of the state of Missouri, that they're going to bring that same level of respect and dignity. And just to give you a concrete example of what this looks like, Jason, I was out on the first Sunday night that they were out. I was riding with the state's director of the Department of Public Safety. We pulled up on a car that had been abandoned. And as we pulled up, the owners of that car also pulled up. They had a flat tire. The state's director of our Department of Public Safety and two members of the Missouri State Highway Patrol got out of the car and were down on their knees on a hot night in St. Louis changing the tire. And they've been out helping men and women who've had car crashes. They've been out changing tires. They're doing this work, and I think what they're doing is creating a culture of public safety so that people can trust in our law enforcement officers, because that is part of what we need to create a culture of peace, is that we need to find ways to bridge those gaps. We need to find ways to bring the community together, which is also why it's so important that we involve our clergy in this effort. You know, it's why I spent time with Bishop Jones, who actually brought together mothers and fathers who'd lost kids to violence. It's why, you know, I was honored when you came out and you joined us when we went out with Reverend McCoy to actually walk the streets. It's important for us to go out and to hear from clergy and to hear from people on the front lines about what we can all do better in order to bring people together.
Missouri Governor Eric Reitens talking with our own Jason Rosenbaum. Jason is with me in studio. Jason, no one can doubt just listening to him that he is very, very sincere about the desire and the need for solving this crime problem.
I think that it's not a matter of whether you want to solve the crime problem. It's a matter of, A, whether your crime plan will actually work and whether there will be unintended consequences. That was kind of at the crux of why I asked him the racial profiling question. Mm-hmm. Not to suggest that the Highway Patrol has systemic issues, which is why I made that clear, but because I had heard from not only some in the activist community, but I think just ordinary people that was a concern because of this plan. So that was the question, and that was the answer from the governor.
There are other concerns, too. Not everybody is totally on board with this particular plan. And I had the opportunity to talk before your interview with the governor, with Bruce Franks, the new freshman representative from 78th District. He's an activist, obviously, and has been involved in a lot of the things that you and the governor talked about in Ferguson. But he is concerned that the governor doesn't fully understand the root causes. He talks about over-enforcement being part of the plan. He said that the governor really has to understand that the cause of crime in the community is a lack of financial resources for the poor community. They need jobs. They need an increase in the minimum wage. He says the governor just doesn't get it.
Then you come to the north side of St. Louis with the hugest police presence and say, I'm here to help y'all. Mm-hmm. I'm here to fix crime, when we all know that the root causes of crime can't be fixed with this over-enforcement. And it's just, he doesn't get it.
Jobs and poverty programs are what the community needs, he says.
That was one of the reasons I asked the next series of questions. When he actually announced his crime plan in the Baden neighborhood in North St. Louis, there were a lot of protesters there who were upset with his decision to let a bill go into effect that would wipe out St. Louis's higher minimum wage. I alluded to that in the following question that's going to play right now. One of the things I've heard from not only elected officials but just ordinary people is that the root cause of a lot of this crime is a lack of education, a lack of economic development, and a lack of a future for a lot of these young people that commit these crimes. I want to know what it is about your plan that's going to deal with some of those issues and what you've done legislatively that is going to deal with those issues. Because as you know, there were a lot of people at your press conference who felt that you have not provided the right economic foundation to deal with some of those economic disparities. So I'd like you to explain to those people why you feel that's not a correct thing.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that we said actually from the very beginning in the state of our state address is that in order to create peace in our communities, there's a component of law enforcement. You have to involve the business community. You have to involve clergy. You have to give people confidence in our justice system. But exactly as you said, Jason, you're exactly right about this. People also have to have economic and educational opportunity. We have to create hope for people. And so we have been pursuing an agenda that's going to help to bring jobs. We want to bring more private sector paychecks and bigger private sector paychecks, not just in the city of St. Louis, but throughout the state of Missouri. I'll give you just a couple specifics of some of the things that we're doing. First of all, we signed right-to-work legislation. This was actually really important to put Missouri on the map to let people know that Missouri was open for business again. And I can tell you from working with businesses who are selecting the sites where they might build and invest, Missouri is now on their list. Missouri is now a place where they're thinking about coming. St. Louis in particular had a reputation for being the number one worst judicial hellhole in the country, the hardest legal environment for businesses to operate. And we've taken on a number of tort reform measures. We're taking on nasty trial lawyers who've been driving businesses out of the city of St. Louis and out of the state of Missouri. All of those things are important for us to do. On the education front, there's a lot of work for us to do. I think you've probably seen, for the first time in a decade, my administration is fully funding K-12 education. We are fully funding K-12 education. We're also putting additional resources in, especially for kids who have special needs. Now, this is a really important thing for us to do, but I also believe that we need to make sure that those kids and their parents have educational opportunity, and that's why we're pursuing things like charter schools and education savings accounts to provide opportunity to kids who right now don't feel like they have it.
Why do you think somebody in North St. Louis or South St. Louis should care about right to work or tort reform when they can't even find a job or send their kids to a good school?
Well, I think that they do care about these things because what they've seen is that by these reforms, we're letting people know that Missouri is open for business. And businesses are now moving to Missouri. They're starting to invest in Missouri because they see that we've sent the word out that Missouri is open for business. And this ends up making a difference at the level of just the average worker and their family. When we have more jobs and more opportunity, that helps people at a very basic level. We want to increase people's take-home pay. We want to make sure that we've got more private sector paychecks and bigger private sector paychecks here in the state of Missouri.
Governor Eric Greitens is talking to Jason Rosenbaum. Jason, is there any evidence that businesses are moving out of the area?
I mean, right to work hasn't even gone into effect yet.
Sure.
So we don't know whether that's going to matter. And I don't know. I think it remains to be seen whether it's going to lead to wholesale economic development in some of the neighborhoods that the governor wants to rid of crime. And that was the impetus behind my follow-up question.
Yeah, we should point out, and we have to take a break now, but we should point out that in the past, a number of very significant businesses have left this area because they've gone to right-to-work states.
Well, I don't know if that was the reason, though, and I would have to see each business. And I would also say that a lot of people who are in labor unions would say that right-to-work weakens labor unions, and that's not a good thing. But others would say that it helps put Missouri on the map for business. So I want to make sure both perspectives are there.
We'll have to wait and see on that, obviously. That's Jason Rosenbaum, St. Louis Public Radio. We're talking about his recent sit-down interview with Governor Eric Reitens, a relatively rare opportunity for reporters these days. That is the one-on-one sit-down, if you will. We'll come back and talk more about some of the things that transpired during that discussion in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. We'll continue our conversation with Jason Rosenbaum about his sit-down interview with Governor Greitens in just a moment. But first, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. Members of the St. Louis County Council are considering whether to take away St. Louis County Prosecutor Bob McCullough's higher pension. Some of them say they were unaware they were voting to increase his pension last year. A construction industry trade group is sounding alarms about Missouri's transportation systems. Associated General Contractors of Missouri say the future of the state's roads and bridges is in jeopardy because Missouri does not have a permanent funding plan. And Illinois Governor Bruce Rauner says he will call lawmakers into special session to deal with public school funding if they don't send him legislation on the issue by Monday. He repeated his call today for the Senate to send him the measure the General Assembly approved in May that revives the school aid formula. Join St. Louis Public Radio this afternoon for local and regional news and throughout the day on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Now back to our conversation with Jason Rosenbaum. Jason, the governor stepping into this anti-crime plan didn't do it in a vacuum. Obviously, he had to go over the issue with people who are directly involved, and I assume he did that.
When I was at the press conference, St. Louis Mayor Lyda Crewson mentioned that she had discussed this with the governor. What, as you'll see in the next clip, a number of other elected officials in St. Louis, from state legislators to the aldermanic level, felt that they weren't consulted. And I wanted the governor to elaborate how much local input was put into this proposal. Before we get into PDMP, I wanted you to just explain what input you had with the local elected officials. Because from what I heard the mayor, Lyda Crewson, said, you had talked with her several times before you rolled out this plan. I got a sense, though, that didn't trickle down to the state representatives and aldermen that were very critical of it. What role did local officials come – let me rephrase that.
Sure.
What role did local officials have in developing the crime plan?
Yeah, so first we did start – we'd actually started talking with Mayor Slay when he was in office. And then we were talking with Mayor Crewson when we knew that she was going to become the incoming mayor. We talked with her before she even took office. And since that time, our public safety teams have not only been talking with the mayor, but perhaps even more importantly, they've also been talking with the city of St. Louis, with their police officers on the front lines. We've been talking with Chief O'Toole. We've been talking with Chief Belmar. We're working with people at the local level to get them involved. And yes, there are state representatives and state senators who've come to see us in the legislature, and we invite all of them to bring their ideas. We invite anybody who's willing to help us to address this problem and save lives. We welcome them onto the team. This is a problem for all of us to address. It doesn't matter if somebody's a Republican or a Democrat. Doesn't matter if they live in St. Louis City or St. Louis County. If there's a way for somebody to help us to address this problem, then we want to work with them. And the last thing I'll say on this point, Jason, is that this is for us the beginning of the mission. This is the beginning of the mission. And just like when I was a Navy SEAL, we'd execute an operation, and then we'd go forward and we'd see what works. And if it was working, we'll do more of it. If it's not working, we'll do less of it. And we invite feedback. We invite input from everybody who's working on this problem out on the front lines. The only thing that we won't accept anymore, and you've heard me say this, we won't accept excuses. We won't accept inaction. I refuse to turn to grandparents who don't feel like they can let their grandkids walk the streets of St. Louis and say that there's nothing we can do. You know, we've got teachers who have to explain to kids in their classroom why there's an empty desk when we lose another child to violence. I refuse to let us accept things as they are. We're going to move forward, and we're going to do things differently in order to address this problem and create safer streets.
Missouri Governor Eric Greitens talking with Jason Rosenbaum of our staff here, and Jason is with me in studio. Jason, once again, the governor indicates a willingness to be flexible.
Yes, he did. And I think that he might have to be. You know, crime in St. Louis is not something that just happened in the last couple of years. It's been a systemic part of St. Louis life for decades, if not generations. And I think that I understand the governor's desire to try to help from a state level. I think now, though, that he has made this effort, he also will get some responsibility if it doesn't work. So I think that I can't read his mind, but I think that could be one of the reasons he mentioned at the end that he wants input and he's willing to change. Mm-hmm. He lived in the city of St. Louis for a long time. I wrote about that late last year, that he's the first city of St. Louis resident to become governor in a long time. So I think that you can't be a resident of the city and not either be affected or just turn your back to what's happening here with crime. Even if you live in a not so crime-ridden area, it affects everywhere you go.
You're right. Obviously, the crime has been an issue here for a long time, but that takes me back to Bruce Franks, who said that the governor may not get it and doesn't get it, is the way that he put it, because you generally have high crime rates where you have high poverty rates, and most urban areas are afflicted in that manner.
I mean, the statistics and what you see with your own eyes speak for themselves.
Right. You mentioned PDMP in that beginning of that interview.
Which is a shorthand for Prescription Drug Monitoring Program.
I was just going to mention that and clarify that, which is something else. Missouri has finally caught up with the rest of the country and coming up with a program thanks to the governor's executive order.
That was the big news this week. He announced via an executive order that he was going to be setting up a statewide prescription drug monitoring program with the help of private companies like Express Scripts. It came after the legislature failed to pass one. He didn't have unlimited latitude. I think if he wanted this database to operate differently, as we'll talk about, he would have needed legislation. But he didn't have that, and he had to act in the manner that he did.
Before we go to that clip, however, what was the reservation that the legislature had about this program?
Privacy. They were worried that putting a lot of information about what prescriptions people took into a centralized database led to privacy concerns. And I think that there is also some questions from more conservative members of the legislature about whether this program is actually effective. So that was pretty much the reason I heard. So the first question though on this topic was actually more of a philosophical one, because one of the things that I've noticed, and you'll hear in the question, is that I think that the opioid crisis is being treated differently than other drug epidemics in the past. One of the things that I've noticed is politicians now are dealing with opioid and heroin abuse as a public health crisis.
Yes, sir.
When, you know, in the 1980s, during the crack epidemic,
yes,
which primarily affected African Americans, it was dealt with throwing people in jail. I'm just curious if you, as an elected official, realize, a new elected official who wasn't there in the 80s or even in the 2000s, that maybe the way people handled drug addiction in the past by throwing people in jail instead of rehabilitating them wasn't the way to go. I'd like to hear your perspective on that as somebody who, as you mentioned today, had a cousin who died of a heroin overdose.
Yeah, Jason, you know, as you mentioned, I did. I had a cousin who died of a heroin overdose. When we announced our statewide prescription drug monitoring program today, we brought in families. And when you talk to these families about the loss that they have experienced, the loss of sons, the loss of daughters to the opioid addiction and to the tremendous heroin epidemic and the problems that we're facing here in the state of Missouri, you recognize that we have to act. We have to take action. And one of the things that I would say is so important is that we do recognize that this is a public health emergency. There is absolutely a component for law enforcement to play. There's a component for the private sector to play. You saw today we announced some of our private sector partners who are working with us. There's a role for the government to play. But it's important for people to recognize that with this heroin epidemic, we're not going to arrest our way out of this problem. This is a problem where we have to deal with drug courts. We have to deal with treatment. We have to deal with what's happening inside of our justice system. These are complex problems. And again, the only thing that's unacceptable to us are excuses. We're here to take action and to recognize that this is. It is a public health emergency.
I then asked the governor about some criticism and misgivings about his executive order. U.S. Senator Claire McCaskill released a statement, which I'm sure you've seen by now, that said one of the, in her views, flaws of your idea is it lets the state see opioid prescriptions as opposed to doctors and pharmacists. What do you make of that argumentation? Because I would assume that most of the other PDMPs do allow doctors to see this data. From my understanding, from reading the executive order, this data will just be for the state's eyes only and not for doctors. Why is that a better approach?
Well, look, this is a really strong approach that we've put in place with our executive order. And you should know, Jason, like I recognize any time we take strong action, whether that's to address the crime problem or the opioid addiction, there are going to be critics and there are going to be politicians who talk about this problem. But I think what's giving people such confidence is that we're willing to step out and to take action to save lives. And the reason why our program is going to be so important, just a little history here. We've had prescription drug monitoring programs in the United States since the 1930s. And we went out and what we did as a team was we studied what works. We studied what works in other states and we studied what works historically. The point of a prescription drug monitoring program is to make sure that you can look at the misuse, abuse, and diversion of prescription drugs. What our program allows us to do, it allows our Department of Health and Senior Services to see the source of the problem, to see when you have prescribers. For example, if you've got, you know, one doctor in a particular county who's responsible for 90% of the opioid prescriptions, we can address that problem at the source. If you've got a dentist who's given one patient 70 prescriptions for opioids over the course of the past 18 months, we can address that problem. So we're going right to the source. And the other thing that's innovative about our model, and again, this is an integrated, comprehensive, innovative model, is that working with private sector partners, and this is some groundbreaking work we're doing here in the state of Missouri, we're going to be able to use their data and their analytic capability to actually pinpoint the problems in the state of Missouri. Now, again, I want to be very clear for everybody. This is an essential step. It's an essential first step. But this prescription drug monitoring program isn't going to solve the opioid problem here in the state of Missouri. Without this prescription drug monitoring program, though, we can't solve the problem. It's an important first step.
St. Louis County Executive Steve Stanger said in a statement today that they're going to continue to operate the St. Louis County database. Is there going to be any difficulties or conflicts with both of those running at the same time?
No, sir. Not that I anticipate. And I look forward to working with anybody at a local level, at a county level, at a federal level, who's excited and is willing to work with us. I'm glad to hear that other people are joining us, that we're all taking action together. This is a problem for people around the state of Missouri. And again, regardless of political party, I want people to recognize that we all have to address this plague together. And I'm not just glad to hear about that. I'm excited about the fact that there are other people who want to work with us to address this problem.
Well, Jason, he hints at bipartisanship there and it being a necessary part of the legislative process. Again, I want to go back to Bruce Franks and I asked him about the chances for a bipartisanship relations going forward.
So I think he's a different person as he was as a candidate. And I know what the paper says. The paper says he's a Republican. I don't know what he is. He's shown that He's not willing to really take forth in bipartisanship.
Do you sense any areas of potential improvement in your relationship and the party's relationship with the governor and the governor in particular?
At this rate, I don't see it.
Well, there you are. I mean, there aren't battle lines drawn because of the Republican majority, but it doesn't look, from Mr. Frank's point of view, that they're going to get along all that well.
Well, he's the governor at least till 2020, if not longer. So he's going to have a lot of influence and policy power over a lot of things that affect St. Louis. So the Democratic delegation, like Representative Franks, are going to have to find some way to work together with the Republican governor. It's going to be the governor who may have the upper hand because he holds the power.
We will see. A special session to be concluded perhaps, and then the legislative session begins again.
I'll be there next week.
You certainly will be. Jason Rosenbaum, thank you so much.
Thank you, Don.
This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.